Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Oh, yes. Well, welcome, everybody. Welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for February 6th, 2013. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. You are here on a great day because today we're going to be talking about freedom. Freedom. And why it can really terrify us and scare us. And also why that's completely human. It's completely normal. It's okay. Now, I'm not talking about freedom from kind of a democracy standpoint, not that kind of freedom, but the concept of existential freedom. And I'm going to be describing what that is, how we feel it, how it can make us nervous and can lead to problems, and what we really need to do to get that under control. And it really was inspired by a conversation that I had with one of my patients earlier in the week, and it really is a testament to the individual's strength to really wrestle with that concept of true freedom, what it means, the responsibilities that that puts upon us, but how the strength of the human spirit can move through that fear towards important change in our lives and becoming that person that we want to become. So the concept of freedom, I think you're really going to enjoy this week's program. In health news, wow, a busy, busy week of news. A couple really interesting stories. Since we're talking about freedom and anxiety and all that that can bring up, the concept of panic and fear and how our brain will process that. It reacts differently and knows the difference because different areas of the brain are stimulated. And it's really important, particularly for those that may struggle with panic disorder and other types of phobia. So we'll be talking about panic and fear, the surprising new findings in this study that just may change the way that we understand panic and anxiety and our response to it and how our brain knows the difference. And, oh, this one you're going to want to stick around for, folks. How 21 minutes can save your marriage. And you know, I'm just going to leave it right there. You're going to have to stick around for the second half of the podcast. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. If you want to get in touch with me, don't hesitate. The email, peter@thehealthymind.com. So, let's begin. Okay, now, before I get into this topic, I want to set it up properly for you. So as I said, I was in session with one of my patients, longstanding patient, and she is just an incredible, incredible individual. She has been through so much in her life, going back to her childhood. And without getting into the details of it, let's just say that it was a very, very difficult childhood, and it really continued to echo both in terms of memories and nightmares and flashbacks throughout her entire life. But she persevered. This is why I say I am amazed and humbled by the strength of those that I get to see as patients, because it's easy to kind of get through the days when there's not a whole lot going on or you don't have to face a ton of adversity. But the true strength of all of us, and I mean this sincerely, the true strength of who we are is what we do in the face of adversity. And really, this particular individual, I'm just going to call her Mary. But Mary had truly triumphed over an incredible amount of odds and tragedy to get to the point in her life where she decided to go back to school. She was a stay-at-home mom and furthered her education to go into a career of therapy. And she's at that point right now. And there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of worry, a lot of tension about taking this next step. And as we teased it out in terms of what the main issue was, the fear, the worry, it brought out a very, very common theme that I see throughout my treatment. And really, because it's part of the human experience. And this is the concept of freedom. But the freedom that I'm talking about here is more an existential freedom. And if you've been listening to the podcast at all or have been on thehealthymind.com, you know that one of my main influences in my life has been the work of Dr. Irvin Yalom, probably the nation's foremost existential psychotherapist. He's written the book on it, literally. And from this perspective, the existentialists believe behavior, all of our behavior, both healthy and unhealthy behavior, really comes from these core existential anxieties, these universal givens of life. And these anxieties include our fear of isolation, our fear of death, our meaning and purpose, understanding it, and also this concept of existential freedom. Now, what does this mean, existential freedom? All right. Let me give another example. All of us have cable, or at least most of us do. Now, on the cable box, there are literally several hundred channels, right? Probably 1,000 channels. But how many channels do you really watch? How many? If you're like me, it's probably half a dozen, 10, something like that. We have so many things to pick from, yet for most of us, it's going to be a few channels that we pick from, or the internet, just limitless. We're probably going to the same couple dozen websites we always do. And this kind of illustrates the concept of existential freedom. And really what Yalom talked about here was the fact that we have the freedom to do anything that we want. We really do. But if we decide that we have that freedom and it's up to us, my goodness, the ground falls out from under our feet, right? It's up to us to decide and up to us to make sure that we succeed. So it's not that we really want absolute freedom to be able to do anything, but we like structure. But it's this balance between having the freedom to do the things that we want, but also having the structure that really allows us to feel comfortable and calm. So it's nice to know we've got 1,000 channels of cable that we can pick from, but we're really going to pick about 6 or 10 of them. It's nice to know we can go anywhere on the internet, but we're probably going to go to a couple dozen sites, probably at most. So this is kind of an example of this concept between freedom and structure. It's good to know that we have that kind of freedom, but it's a double-edged sword because if we're free to do anything that we want, my gosh, then we're responsible to figure out what it is that we want, what it is that we have to do. And it's not always that easy because the right choices aren't always clear. There's too many options to pick from. There's always this back and forth between freedom and structure. And this was what was really happening with Mary. She had gotten through all of her schoolwork and at this point in her life had to make those decisions about where to go next. And unlike other times in her life, this was all her decision. She wasn't reacting. She wasn't escaping. But it was all her decision. And she was finding it very anxiety-provoking. Even though it was a good thing, a positive change in her life, it was very anxiety-provoking. And she wasn't sure if she could do it, literally. And really the important part here, as I shared with her and I want to share with you, is that this concept of freedom and the anxiety that comes with it doesn't happen because you have depression or an anxiety disorder or some type of emotional problem. this anxiety that comes from freedom, from an existential sense, is part of the human condition. You feel that anxiety because you're human, not because you're depressed or anxious or have a mental problem. It is part of the human condition. But when we face that, kind of peel away the onion of what we paper over to protect ourselves from that anxiety of freedom, we start to feel it. We start to feel nervous and worried and anxious. And I talk about this a lot, particularly for those who see me for chronic pain, the psychophysiologic disorders, that pain and other physical symptoms are kind of a shield, a refuge where the body goes to protect itself from these other uncomfortable emotions and anxieties. And one of these anxieties is when we get too close to that concept of existential freedom. We have the right to do whatever we want. But to have that freedom comes with a ton of responsibility. And sometimes we feel groundless because we don't have the direction. And that can be very, very anxiety provoking. But it's human. It is human. You feel it because you are. So I talked about this with Mary, and I reinforced with her how she had faced so many challenges in her life, including these ideas of freedom, in carving out her relationship with her husband, in terms of separating from her family and becoming her own person with a family of her own. This is where I say that people are so powerful. Why you must never doubt how truly powerful you are, because you have faced these anxieties and have triumphed over them. Just think about your successes. Think about the times you face adversity and you've made it through to the other side of that. You've done it. That's your power. You may not have realized that, but you face that adversity just by living your life. We feel at times that we're so weak, that we're so nervous, that we can't handle things, that there's no way we're going to figure things out, that we can't succeed. But we do. We always do. You know you do. And when we hit these issues, these hot button topics, these anxieties of our human existence, death, meaning, isolation, freedom, it can shake us a little bit. But it shakes us because we're human. But we persevere and we move through. We just need to be reminded of it, that we have faced it and we will face it again and we will triumph. But to not fear those feelings. Those feelings aren't a sign of psychopathology, that there's something wrong with your mind. It's just that you're part of the human race. We all feel those feelings and we embrace it. So as we continued to talk with Mary, she began to realize it. And by the end of the session, really felt good. And it made me feel good that she felt good. Now, I'm not saying this to show you that I'm a good therapist or to prove how wonderful I am. All I did was kindle something within her that validated the fact that she's strong. She did it. I didn't do it. And that's why you can do it. You can take the time to face those demons, to face those fears, and realize part of facing them is just the human experience. And once you move through that fear and realize, heck, I can do it. It's only anxiety. It's only worry. But I've persevered before. Change happens. Change happens. Whether it is emotional change, whether it is physical change, or change in your life, your success, it begins to happen. Freedom. It's not always what we think, and sometimes it can make us really nervous. But don't get too wrapped up about it, because you're human, just like all of us. Just like all of us. So join us. You are not alone. And once you realize that, well, you are well on your way down that road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, another very, very busy week in health news. Now, this first story, really an interesting study that breaks down the basics on fear and panic, and really how the brain responds to this. And it's really important because there's some new information here that challenges some of the theories and thoughts that we have on why we get scared, fear, and panic. And the headline of the story, Fear and Panic, How Our Brain Knows the Difference. And this new study found that different areas of the brain are responsible for external threats, those that are coming at us, and internal threats, like physical symptoms that we may have that scare us. Before, it was thought that one part of the brain itself is responsible for all of this. And it was a really interesting story. There's an individual that they had followed, a fascinating individual. They called her SM, and she had a particular disease. And the disease is known as Urbach-Wiethe disease. And this particular type of disorder causes extensive damage to a part of the brain known as the amygdala. And the amygdala, it's Greek for almond, so it's an almond-shaped part of our brain, and it's really where most of our response to fear comes from in the brain. When we get scared of something, a snake or spiders or a haunted house or something like that, our amygdala will fire to let us know that we should be getting scared. But in this particular disease, the particular individual, that part of the brain had been destroyed. So it was fascinating because this woman felt no fear. They would try to expose her to these things, snakes and spiders and all of that, but she never got scared. In fact, they had talked about one time she had an incident where she was held up at knife point and there was no fear there. So that part of the brain had been destroyed. They had studied all these external threats to her, but they wondered what part of her brain would fire if there was an internal threat. So, how do you create an internal threat in the lab? Well, there's a way of doing it, and it was really interesting. What you do is you have an individual put on a mask, and you pump in carbon dioxide, okay? And what this will do is when you breathe in carbon dioxide, it feels like you're choking. You don't feel real well. You start to gasp. You're worried that you can't breathe. It's very, very fear-inducing, but really panic-inducing. People get very, very scared, and people will say after being administered carbon dioxide gas in an experimental setting, it's only for about a half a minute. It's not going to cause any damage, but that they feel terror, very, very bad panic. So what they had figured was that since an individual has that part of the brain destroyed because of this disease, that they would not feel any fear, terror of that type because of this internal threat. So they set this up with her and a couple other individuals who had damage to that part of the brain, the amygdala, and they administered the carbon dioxide gas. And what do you think happened? The part of the brain is damaged to fear, internal threat. You'd figure there'd be no panic at all, right? The researchers even said in an earlier experiment that they had done back in 2009 in mice that the brain, the amygdala, that part can really respond to carbon dioxide. It goes like mad. It fires like mad when that internal threat is there. So they figured it's damaged. You're not going to get any panic attacks, right? Wrong. In every one of those individuals, SM and those two other individuals who had that part of the brain damaged, they still had panic attacks to an internal threat. It totally threw the researchers off, and it made them start thinking. It may be that when we respond to threats, it depends. Our brain knows the difference when it is an internal threat versus an external threat. And where they had thought that all of it goes through just that part of the brain, the amygdala, in fact, it's another part of the brain because those people that have damage to that part of the brain still had panic. All right, so you're saying, great, what does this mean for me, Dr. Zafiridis? Well, as the researcher said, this really opens the door to a fuller understanding of panic and anxiety. And in that, we may better understand people who have panic disorder or other types of anxiety, and perhaps even how the body responds to those internal signals with anxiety. So really a fascinating study, new findings on understanding how we respond to threats, both internal and external as well. And it turns out our brain knows the difference and responds differently to each type of threat. The science of anxiety. Okay, now, this next piece of news. Goodness, it almost seemed like it was too good to be true, but the headline, How 21 Minutes Can Save Your Marriage. Oh, I'm serious. 21 minutes to save your marriage. Now, what the heck is this all about, you're saying? What is this 21-minute stuff? Well, researchers out of Northwestern University in Chicago found that a brief writing intervention, literally 3 7-minute exercises between spouses, that really allowed them to take a more objective look at when they were arguing, what they were arguing about, allowed them to really diminish or eliminate their marital conflict. And the results continued on where people felt so much marital satisfaction. They got along well with each other simply by doing these exercises. Okay, so what is this about? What the heck is going on here, Zafiridis? Well, the exercises were called the reappraisal intervention. In this particular study, they involved 120 couples, and they followed them every 4 months for 2 years. They would report in on their relationship satisfaction, their marriage, how much love, how much intimacy, trust, passion, and commitment that they had. And those couples that did this simple writing intervention, the results were unbelievable. According to the lead author, professor of psychology at Northwestern, Dr. Eli Finkel, quote, "I don't want to sound like magic, but you can get pretty impressive results with minimal intervention," end of quote. But what exactly is this reappraisal intervention? And it's a writing task that asks participants to really think about their most recent disagreement or argument with their partner, but from the perspective of a third party, a neutral third party who wants the best for everyone involved. And simply being able to look at it in that way and do the exercises, it made a dramatic difference. So they had two sets of groups, those that would do the writing intervention and those that wouldn't. Two sets of couples, okay? Now, both of these sets of couples normally exhibited declines in marital satisfaction over the following year. But for the spouses who experienced that reappraisal intervention, who completed the writing task 3 times during year 2, the decline in marital satisfaction was entirely eliminated. Entirely eliminated. The intervention couples were less distracted by these fights, which really helped them. They maintained their marital satisfaction, more love, more intimacy. It was incredible. Now back to Dr. Finkel, quote, "Not only did this effect emerge for marital satisfaction, it emerged for other relationship processes like passion and sexual desire that are especially vulnerable to the ravages of time." And this isn't a dating sample. These effects emerged whether people were married for 1 month, 50 years, or anywhere in between. End of quotes. Wow, a writing intervention. Now, they went on to talk about the fact that marital satisfaction is so critical and it has health benefits. It's not just about our emotions and how content we feel. Like I've talked about before on the healthy mind, there are physical ramifications to being stressed. In fact, Dr. Hinkel talked about this with regards to coronary artery bypass patients and those individuals that went through bypass surgery but had high marital satisfaction shortly after the surgery were 3 times more likely to be alive 15 years later than those that did not have good marital satisfaction. Back to Dr. Finkel, quote, "Having a high quality marriage is one of the strongest predictors of health and happiness. From that perspective, participating in a 7-minute writing exercise 3 times a year has been one of the best investments married people can make. Marriage is healthy, yes, but the quality of marriage is much more important than just being married. Anything that we can do to help our partners to get along with each other pays its rewards not only in the emotional realms, but in our overall quality of life and our physical well-being as well. Pretty incredible results for 21 minutes. Okay, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the rest of the news in a segment I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acids may help clear brain plaques found in Alzheimer's disease. A team of researchers has pinpointed how vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acids may enhance the immune system's ability to clear the brain of amyloid plaques, one of the hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease, inflammation, and improve plaque clearance. The next headline, and really I would take the time to look at this, it's on my blog, but the headline, study raises questions about dietary fats and heart disease guidance. The dietary advice about fats and the risk of heart disease is called into question today as a clinical trial shows that replacing saturated fats, animal fats, with omega-6 polyunsaturated fats or vegetable fats is linked to an increased risk of death amongst patients with heart disease. And finally, we've talked about this before, these epigenetic changes, the fact that stress can really affect the DNA that is passed on to future generations. The headline, obesity in dads may be associated with an offspring's increased risk of disease. A father's obesity is one factor that may influence his children's health and potentially raise the risk for diseases like cancer, according to new research from Duke Medicine. This study is the first in humans to show that a father's obesity may alter a genetic mechanism in the next generation. And this suggests that a father's lifestyle factors may be transmitted to his children. So these healthy lifestyles, these healthy behaviors, a healthy mindset isn't just for us and our current loved ones, but those lifestyles and how we take care of ourselves can have an impact on future generations. Epigenetic changes, just amazing, amazing to see what science is learning. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again, you and I. We have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Please don't hesitate to sign up for the free monthly newsletter. You can find the tab right there on the homepage. Follow me anytime on Twitter. I'm at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, anything that you want to talk about, I want to hear from you. Don't hesitate to email me. The email address, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.